Welcome this evening to Progressive Bible Concepts. We're in the segment on strengthening your core, and this is concept 28, which is entitled Increasing Your Faith. Now, from a beginning standpoint, we talked last week about how Jesus was exasperated by the littleness of faith of his followers. And if there was anything that provoked him while he was on earth more than anything else, it was to see his own followers not really fully grasping what he had for them and what he wanted to do for them. So when Jesus used the phrase little faith, he was talking about a compartmentalized faith that trusts God in some areas but not others. And it was a kind of a bifurcated, compartmentalized faith that wasn't comprehensive and thorough. And so as you look at where your own faith is now, let's suppose this circle over here is weak and the circle on the far right is strong. Zero faith in the left, 100% faith on the far right. Where would you put yourself with the set of circumstances that you may be dealing with today? I'd probably say I'm about 70%. A couple of things that are challenging right now. Got to learn to trust the Lord with. As for me, anybody else? Where would you put yourself?
50.
Half and half. Okay. Susan?
50.
Okay, half and half. That means you got half faith and half doubt, would you say? Put it that high?
Well, I'm just struggling.
Okay. All right. Well, you're in that period where you gotta keep pushing. Ray, where are you?
I'm somewhere between weak and strong.
Weak and strong? All right, so that means you're 52. Teresa, where would you put yourself?
Due to your class, I'm up to 75 now.
Whoa! All right. Well, the word will do that for you. The scripture will.
The
scripture will elevate your faith. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word. All right, that's good. Now, here's where we're going to be going. We've looked at living by faith, the eyes of faith, little faith, and tonight we're going to talk about this question: increasing our faith. We want our faith to grow. We want to develop. We want to get further along in our journey with the Lord, having been saved by grace, not by works. Now we live by faith, and we want our faith, which is the vehicle of our connection with God and also our walk with God, to grow. Our key verse for this segment is the righteous man shall live by his faith. So your faith determines the quality of your journey, and we want to keep our faith strong and protect our faith from anything that undermines it by injecting doubt and fear and anxiety into our relationship with the Lord. The centrality of faith is very obvious in the Bible. For by grace you're saved through faith, and then also the righteous man shall live by his faith. So we're saved by faith and we live by faith, and our faith, as we said symbolically a couple weeks ago, the faith is the eyes of the soul. When you've got clear vision in the soul level, you can see God and what he's doing clearly, and you're at rest and at peace with him. But if you don't see that clearly and your vision is murky, then you'll have a weak grasp of what God is doing, and you'll be a mixture of fear and doubt, double-minded, tossed here and there by the waves of the sea. And we don't want to live that way. That's not what God has for us. So little faith. We said little faith last couple weeks ago is a compartmentalized faith. That is a faith that's separated into sections, or a faith that touches certain parts of your life, but not all of them. An integrated faith is what we're aiming for, which is a faith that connects with every aspect of your life so that everything is out in the open between you and the Lord, and everything is on the table with him, and you're trusting him with all those areas. So we also saw last week that the antidote to faith is doubt, and the antidote to doubt is faith. So as your doubt expands, your faith contracts, and as your faith expands, your doubts contract. And the James chapter 1 verse 5 says, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God in faith without any doubting. For the man who doubts is like the surf of the sea, tossed here and there on the waves of the sea. Let not that man expect to receive anything. So we want to have a faith that has no doubts. And it's a full, thoroughgoing faith, and that's tough to attain to because our faith goes up and down. It undulates a lot of times based upon circumstances and the challenges that we are dealing with at that point. But our aim is to get to the point where we have a pure faith, a holistic faith. So in summary, concept 27, the last concept we studied, went like this. Little faith compartmentalizes God in a destabilizing way that limits both his work in our lives and our expectation of his blessing. So we don't want to be caught in that little faith mindset of only having an obscure grasp of who God is and what he's doing in our lives. We want to see the whole picture. Okay, now, what we're going to do tonight is talk about how to strengthen and to grow your faith. And there are three prayers that are what we'll call model prayers in the New Testament regarding people's faith. There is, first of all, the prayer for increased faith. At one point in the disciples' relationship with Jesus, they said to him, "Lord, increase our faith, build it, grow it, mature it." And they wanted to know how to do that. So we'll look at that prayer. The second prayer was from someone who was struggling with a needy person in their lives and wanted to see them helped. And it was prayer for help to overcome belief, which is another way of saying, "Lord, increase my faith." So these prayers run parallel. And then thirdly, there is the example of a prayer of great faith in the Bible that caused Jesus to marvel when he heard this prayer. And it was a prayer that Jesus was used to people marveling at him. And when he hears this prayer, now suddenly he's marveling at somebody else. And this is Jesus being intrigued and marveled by this person's prayer. So we'll look at that prayer also. And these are examples of how we can begin to move our faith forward in a maturing direction. So let's start with the first one, prayer for increased faith. All right, where do we find this? In Luke 17, verses 5 and 6, it says, "The apostles said to the Lord," all right, these are the 12 talking to Jesus, "and they said, Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you." It would do that. It would actually do that. So, an interesting response we see to their request. Now, let's break this down a little bit and drill down into the verse so that we fully understand what was taking place here. The word increase, which is the operative word in the apostles' request to the Lord, the word means to add or give in addition to. In other words, what I've already got, Lord, I want you to make it bigger. I want you to add to it or to increase it. So the root word means to stand toward something. And that signifies I'm standing, but I want to stand in a bigger and a greater way toward this idea. So when they said, Lord, increase our faith, it means, Lord, I'm already got my feet somewhat on the ground here, but I want this faith to grow bigger and better and to increase in quality. So the meaning is to add to what's already in place, which suggests a building upon, an expanding, adding another level, or to use an analogy, adding another story to an existing building. So the apostles weren't without faith. They had a certain measure of faith, but what they wanted to do was to increase that faith. In other words, whatever quantity they had, if they had 30 bushels of faith, they wanted 60 bushels of faith. They already had something to work with, but they knew that it still wasn't sufficient yet. So they prayed this prayer, Lord, increase our faith. Now the implication is, the implication of this request was, it implies building upon what's already there, expanding or integrating their faith to a greater degree that touches more of their lives. That's what they're asking for. A greater, more expansive, more inclusive faith. Now, let's take a look at this prayer for increased faith and see what we can learn about it. All right, first of all, the desire of the disciples was for their faith to grow. Now, why is that important? What's that?
As Christians, we should always be growing.
Yes, but does everybody necessarily want their faith to increase? Not necessarily. When they prayed this prayer, Lord, increase our faith, it signified the will to grow. Now, in counseling, if you're a counselor or if you've ever been a part of any counseling, the ultimate reason people get better in counseling is when they have the will to get better. In other words, you can be the best counselor in the world, and if a person doesn't will to get better, they won't. In other words, some people don't want to get better. Have you ever been around a kind of a chronic complaining person where if it ain't one thing, it's another? They're always fussing about something. Something's not right. And they always see the part of the glass that's half empty versus the part that's half full. And some people define themselves by their affliction or their unhealthiness. And if you think about it, there's motivation to do that. For instance, if you're sick and you get better, then that means suddenly you're going to have to pony up a little bit more. You're going to have to take more ownership of your life. Whereas when you're sick or unhealthy and you're not performing, you've got an excuse to hide behind. And some people like hiding behind excuses. There are what's called today in the world of counseling, professional counselees, where people go to counseling and spend tons of money and they don't ever grow. And why don't they grow? Is it because the counselors are ineffective? The predominating factor is that they don't have a will to grow. They don't will to get better. So when the apostle said, Lord, increase our faith, what that exemplified was we want our faith to grow. We are not happy at the current level that our faith is. So we want to get better. And that's the will to getting better in anything or to growing in anything, is that you want it to get better. So when you look at your faith, would you say you really want your faith to grow? Do you want your faith to get better? Or are you comfortable cruising right along at your level that you're at now? If you want it to stay at its current level, just understand it probably will. Unless you want it to grow, it won't. And that's kind of the nature of things. You know, when marriages don't last and marriages don't survive, usually what causes the breakup is that on one party's part, there is a lack of a desire for it to work. Is it because the equipment needed to make it work is non-existent? Or is the lack of desire there? Usually it's one person, can be both. When it's both, the marriage doesn't really have a chance. But if one person doesn't want it to work, it's probably not going to work. So it's that will for it to work that hold things together. And if you've been married, you know that sometimes marriage can be hanging by a thread. And sometimes it's doing better than others, but the other times when it's barely hanging on, and it wouldn't take much to snap it and to blow it up. And what keeps it in place at times is the will for it to stay in place. Well, when it comes to growth and development in any aspect of our lives, desire is all important. So the prayer of the apostles, Lord, increase our faith, exemplified the desire for their faith to grow. So let's start with the assumption here that we all want our faith to grow. And the will to do what's necessary for that to happen is there. That's important. Okay, their appeal was a strong one. And the reason why I say that is because the word increase, our faith is in the imperative mood. In other words, they weren't asking Jesus to improve their faith. They were commanding him to improve their faith. Now, that seems kind of ironic that they would command Jesus to increase their faith. It might have been a little bit forward, maybe a little bit inappropriate, but you have to respect their desire. They really want their faith to grow. And so they impose themselves upon the Lord and say, Lord, make this happen. We want our faith to grow. So that's commendable. And their appeal was a very strong one. And we want to be numbered among those who are never satisfied with where our faith is, but we want our faith to constantly be in a dynamic growth mode. His response to them was this. It's not the quantity of your faith, but the quality of it. You're asking to expand the quantity of it. You're kind of barking up the wrong tree here. What you don't need is more of the faith that you have, but you need a deeper, richer, purer faith, is the way he responds to their request. Not the quantity, but the quality of their faith. The statement, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be it rooted, be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now, how many times have you ever heard this verse quoted by someone who's a faith absolutist and who says, look, it says right here that if you've got faith, that's all it takes to make it happen. Bless you. That's all it takes. And we've all probably had that happen. Now, sometimes what happens when we say to people, when we take this verse the wrong way, is that the reason why things don't happen is because it's your faith that's at fault. So when somebody's sick and they come for healing and we pray for them and they don't get healed, we say, well, you just don't have enough faith. How do you think that makes a sick person feel? When they came to get prayed for and they didn't get better and you say, well, there's sin in your life somewhere. Faith is not right. Go get your faith right and then come back and we'll fix this thing. All you do is put in a heavy guilt trip on people when you do that. So this verse, taken as it is, can be a misappropriation of Jesus' idea. This is what's called, in gospel language, an abbreviated narrative. In other words, everything implied in the verse is not necessarily in the verse. And this was a form of literature in the early days, in the ancient literature in the day in which Jesus lived, in which sometimes you just had a condensation of the thought. But when that happens in our literalist modern day times, it's like we try to make it say something it's really not trying to say. So what should it read like? Here's how the statement should technically read. If you had faith like a mustard seed, and God commanded you to say to the mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, it would obey you. In other words, what ultimately determines if a mulberry tree hopscotches from dry land into the sea is whether God wills that to happen. And what we want to have is a faith that connects us to what God wills to happen. So if God is willing something to take place, then we want to have the faith to believe that because it's happening a certain way, God is commanding it to happen that way, and we want to trust that it's going to work out. Does that make sense? So ultimately, it's the sovereignty of God at work around us that we want to tap into by having a confident faith that God is sovereign, all is well, and everything's going to come together and it's going to work out. That's the faith that we need to have. So when we go through these undulating circumstances in life, and our faith tends to rise and fall with those circumstances, what we want is a faith that stays even, that tracks with what God is doing and trusts in that. So what Jesus is saying here is you don't need a bigger faith. You just need a deeper quality of faith that just connects you trustingly into whatever God is doing around you. That's what works. So let your faith grow in quality by purifying it of doubt. When doubts arise in your mind, own them and then address them. Deal with them. If need be, confess them. It's okay to say to God at times, Lord, I am just having trouble right now believing that this is of you or that this is going to work out for everybody's good. It's okay to do that. It's okay to talk to God on that level. He can handle that. He can process that. That's not going to neutralize what God is doing in your life. So God is at work, and what we need is a quality of faith that ties us into the work that He's doing, and that is not overshadowed or clouded with doubt. So the idea of increasing your faith means to reduce your doubts and just learn to trust God in a thorough way and in a full way with whatever He's doing around you. That's the way our faith increases, and it calms the heart and prepares us to enjoy the blessings that God gives to us. All right, now the second prayer that we'll look at is the prayer to help you overcome, help us overcome unbelief when we have it. There will be times when we will have trouble trusting God with certain circumstances. And this is a prayer to help overcome that unbelief. All right, I'm going to save my voice. Somebody read this for me. This is from Mark chapter 9, verses 21 and 24. Who wants to read?
Teacher, I brought you my son possessed with the spirit, which makes him mute. And he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. Has often thrown himself in the fire and the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible to him who believes. And the boy's father cried out and began saying, I do believe. Help me in my unbelief.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Now, notice that Jesus is approached here by an Israelite who's got a major problem on his hands. He has a demon-possessed child. Now, that's a parent's worst nightmare. A close parallel to this would be having a kid on drugs today who can't get off. I have a high school friend who, she was a grade older than I was, and on Christmas Day, she found their only child overdosed on drugs in his bed at 18 years of age. And I talked to her, probably this was years after it occurred, and she still couldn't talk about it. It brought such anguish to her to think about it. And so here this gentleman has a son who's possessed with a spirit that makes him mute. He can't talk, he can't communicate. And Jesus says, well, how long has this been going on? A long time, since childhood. This is a pattern of behavior that has been uninterrupted for years. And notice the other bad thing about it was that it's been going on from childhood, and this spirit often throws him into the fire or into bodies of water to destroy him. Now, here's a child who's trapped in self-destructive patterns of behavior. Throwing themselves into a fire? How many times can you do that and survive? Or throwing yourselves into water without drowning? And so the parent is distraught and exasperated and wrung out as any would be. And so he's struggling with accepting this as a way of life, but also believing maybe Jesus can fix this. So he says, but if you can do something, take pity on us and help us. So Jesus looks at him and says, if you can, all things are possible to him who believes. God can do something. And any range of possibility is available to those who believe. We just got to connect into God's power. So immediately the boy's father cries out and begins saying, oh, Lord, I believe. Help me in my unbelief. So, this is a very vulnerable passage here in which this man talks about his weakness of faith and his need to trust God. So let's look into the passage and try to learn some things. Here's some observations. Number one, the father's despair was totally understandable. There are times when we will deal with circumstances that will just be overwhelming and it will be undermining of our faith. It will overwhelm our joy, undermine our faith, and we will just be in states of mild despair to severe. He came to Jesus feeling completely powerless. Lord, I can't fix this. As a parent, I would do anything for my child, and there's nothing I can do to make this any better. It's been going on too long. It's too involved. And I'm out of options. I'm glad you're here. Hopefully you can do something. So he approaches Jesus out of ambivalence and perplexity. And folks, it's okay to do that. When you get wrung out, better to approach Jesus out of ambivalence and perplexity than not to approach him at all. So he comes to Jesus in a pretty banged up, overwhelmed state. He's not at the top of his game spiritually, and he's really struggling. So, but that doesn't stop him from coming to Jesus, though. He comes to God anyway. Now, this is important to realize this because many times when we find ourselves in overwhelming circumstances, those circumstances can either move us toward God or away from God. If we let the circumstances take hold of too much of us, it'll push us away. And lots of times people do get overwhelmed with how the hand that life is dealing with them, and they just throw their hands up and walk away from God. They just give up. They don't believe anymore. How could God do this? How can there be a God when so and so happens? But these are circumstances that if we manage them correctly, what we should let them do is bring us to God. He approaches Jesus in a very perplexed state, but give him credit, at least he came to Jesus and he asked for help when he really needed it. If you can, in other words, if it's within your power. Now, he was not meaning to insult Jesus, I don't think. And I think that tentativeness that those words express is more the condition of his own heart than it is what Jesus is capable of or not capable of. But nonetheless, he comes to him with this tentative, hope you can do something, Lord. And if you can help us, come to our rescue. And at this point, he's asking Jesus to help his son. In other words, address the circumstance that I'm dealing with right now. Now, belief, according to what Jesus said, opens unlimited possibilities with God. Unbelief closes unlimited possibilities with God. And Jesus says to him, if you can, of course I can, I'm God. All things are possible to him who believes. So there's really no limit to what God can do here. And we never want to limit God in any set of circumstances, no matter how bleak they might appear. And so when Jesus says, all things are open to those who believe, this man says, Lord, I do believe. I want to believe. I want to have a true, genuine trust in you. It's just so hard to believe that way when we've been battered and bruised by this trial that's been going on for so long, that's so devastating. So he said, I do believe. And then notice that he shifts from help us to help me. He shifts from healing his son to helping him with his lack of faith. So there's two things going on here in this particular situation. There is the circumstance which needs to be addressed. This is a destructive set of circumstances, and if it continues, this child is not going to survive into adulthood. You can't keep going down the pathway this child was going down and survive. But along with the circumstance that was happening, there's this man's response to the circumstance. And so he says, Jesus, help us fix the circumstance, but in the meantime, help me grow in my response to the circumstance. So faith is our response to the reality of what we're facing. So he says, help me, shifts from healing his son to healing his faith. Help me in my unbelief. And he recognizes his doubt and his ambivalence. He owns it. He doesn't try to deny it, but he puts it forward as, Lord, this is where I'm at. Now, if you read through the Psalms recently, you'll see in the Psalms this principle illustrated over and over again. David wrote about half the Psalms, the other Psalms written by different people like Solomon and Moses. But you see the various authors of the Psalms coming to God when they're in doubt, when they're afraid, and when they're anxious. They do not let their doubts, their fears, and anxieties isolate them from God. They don't allow that to happen. When they're feeling doubt in isolation from God, that's not like they go sit in the corner and be quiet or put their Bible in a desk drawer and don't open it for a month. That's the time when you need to draw near to God and be honest about what's going on inside. You don't have to try to fake it. You can be honest with it. Just own the reality of what's inside of you and be real with God about that. And we see this modeled, like I said, endless times in the book of Psalms. I just finished reading through the book of Psalms. And there are many times in which they said, God, we just don't like what's happening. And we've got an attitude about it. We need your help. Fix the circumstance and help my attitude. And that's what this guy ends up praying here. Is that I've got a devastating circumstance in my family. I need your help. Lord, do something. And also, I'm struggling to believe that you're going to do something. So help me out here. Help me in my unbelief as well as fix the circumstance. And whenever there's a trial going on in our lives, it's always two levels. It's the objective reality of the circumstance, and it's our response to it also. We can't change the circumstances, but we most certainly can manage our response with God's help. And that's the part that we can do. And next week we'll look at what's called proactive faith, and we'll address that a little bit more deeply. So notice that in the end, his prayer was help is requested both for the trial and his response to the trial. And so when we're going through these circumstances, just keep in mind that God is at work on two levels here, on the circumstantial level and on the heart level, on the motive level. And God will not stop at using challenging circumstances to build our faith. He will sometimes allow very difficult things to happen, which in the long run ends up shaping our faith up or building our faith up so that we're ready and prepared for the next challenge in life. So God is not above letting very painful things happen if it means breaking the power of doubt in our lives. He will do that. All right, now let's come to the third prayer, and this is a very inspiring prayer. This one is, pardon?
What was the last thing?
Ask question. Go ahead, Thomas. Say that again.
What if the child has autism?
Autism?
Yeah, where he can't communicate and not responsive to conversation or anything.
Yeah, yep. Well, what we do in circumstances like that is present those to the Lord and give God a chance to work. And however He works, we've got to prepare ourselves to accept what God does or doesn't do in situations like that. Sometimes He wills children and people to be in those conditions. Because He's the potter and we're the clay, He can choose to do those things. And the Bible speaks of sickness that is unto faith. In other words, it builds our faith. The Bible speaks of sickness that's unto death. We die from sickness. Then the Bible speaks of sickness that's under the glory of God. In other words, God heals it and glorifies Himself through it. I was talking with a lady the other day who developed a severe back condition to the point where she could not get out of the bed in the morning. And she had, I think she had at least two daughters. Can't remember if she has two or one. They were teenagers. And a husband who's an active professional husband doing stuff. And this, her back just got to the point where she couldn't do anything. And I can't remember the exact circumstances of what happened, but she reached a point of despair where she said, in a sense, God, I need for you to do something here, and I'm putting my eyes upon you. And she said at that moment, God spoke to her and said, this will pass. And over the next several days and weeks, she got better to the point where now she's completely functional. And she'd been to every doctor that she could go to, and it hadn't gotten any better. So that's what you call a sickness to the glory of God, in that He chooses to heal it. Now, sometimes there are sicknesses to our discipline, like in 1 Corinthians 11, where the Corinthian church was being drunk while participating in the Lord's Supper, and God afflicted them with sickness as a form of discipline for their disobedience. So the Bible speaks of a number of different types of sickness, some for healing, some for trial, some for faith, and some to the glory of God, and some unto death. And we just have to be prepared to accept whichever those purposes God has in mind. But I think the thing to not do is to necessarily accept that autism without praying about it. I think we should bring that to the Lord and let give God a chance to work, and then whatever He lands on, then God give us faith to accept that.
I had a friend that said, just a child.
Yeah.
And he would get, like, look at a fine shirt, and he would sit there and count every little square there.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't get him off of it.
Yeah.
Until he counted them all.
Mm-hmm.
The people did just humor him. How they handled it is let him count that square.
Yeah.
And the child did come around, but he was never really truly 100% functional.
But he did kind of turn the corner and get better?
He was, they treated him like he was normal, and must have had a lot of faith. And the child never did get any better.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in those circumstances, I think the true response of faith is to always give God a chance to work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I'm sure they prayed a lot.
Yeah.
Just like my brother had ALS. And, he was just more so with it. And he was upset with the disease and more actually angry at the government.
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of other people that have or something similar.
Yeah. And well, those are tough circumstances. Very difficult.
I had a complete loss of my vertigo about 18 months ago. And it's just now coming around to being better.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Of what I can do.
Yeah.
It got to where I couldn't turn my head.
Yeah.
But it's better now.
That sounds good. Do you have a question, Sherry? Was your hand up?
It's just my neck hurts too. I just doing my exercises here.
Well, we'll pray for you after we finish.
We are a real mess.
Let us pray for you when we finish. All right, let's go to this third prayer and see what we can learn from this this gentleman. Now, this is a passage that, like I said, there's a definite inspirational piece to this. All right, who wants to read? Bobby, you want to read it? Okay, this passage is found in Matthew 8, 5 through 13, in which a gentleman comes to the Lord with great faith, and it moves the Lord to make some amazing comments. So let's look at this passage of Scripture. Here again, the centurion was facing a positively horrendous situation. He had a servant who was paralyzed with tormenting pain. In other words, the pain was so severe that it had a paralyzing effect upon him. And back when I was in college and seminary, I used to get kidney stones. And when you get a kidney stone, that pain is so severe that it flattens you. I mean, you cannot function when you've got that. So the image here is of a pain that's so searing and tormenting that it paralyzes you. It's like a bad toothache. You cannot function. And so Jesus is moved with compassion when he hears the request of this centurion to heal his servant, and he intends to heal him. So Jesus wants to step in and intervene and make the situation better. But the centurion, who was a soldier by profession, and the word centurion means that he was a commander of 100 soldiers. He's a leader of 100. The centurion was a military man. And he was also a Gentile from among the pagan nations frowned upon by the Jews. Probably a Roman soldier who had been sent to Israel to keep the Jews in line. And they resented the presence of the Roman soldiers, the conquering army that was ruling over Israel at the time. And so this man was not a Jew, but he was a Gentile. And these were the people that were outcast to the Jews because they weren't members of God's chosen people. So the man is a military man and he's a Gentile. And the first thing he does is that he recognizes his own unworthiness. And this is a true mark of genuine spirituality. He says, Lord, as Jesus intends to come and heal his son, this man says, you know what, Lord, I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof. You don't need to come all the way to my house because my house is so far from ideal and so far from what God would have us to be that you don't really want to do this. So he recognizes his own unworthiness in his poverty of spirit. In other words, this is not a proud man who thinks God owes him anything, which is what the Pharisees tended to think about themselves. He was a very poor man who was poor in spirit, and he was very humble about his condition before the Lord, which is a qualification for God to move in our lives. The humble will be shown grace. The proud God resists, but those that are humble will be shown grace. So he requests that instead of coming all the way to my house and healing this servant, why don't you just speak that reality into existence? Lord, I know you can do it. You can just say the word. You spoke worlds into existence. You pointed and stars raced to their places. You spread out your hands and we have a universe that we live in. You can heal this servant of mine just by speaking the word. I mean, if Jesus was coming to my house and I had a servant in this condition, I wouldn't do anything to discourage that. I'd say, Lord, come on down. Can you knock yourself out? See what you can do here. I mean, this servant of mine is in a bad way. But instead, this guy has such faith that he says, Lord, you don't need to come all the way to my house. Plus, my house is not a holy place anyway. I don't deserve for you to be there. Why don't you just say the word and this will all get fixed. It'll all be taken care of. And so he has this discernment level in which he's got a mental frame of reference in which he, as a soldier, he is under someone else's authority. And he's got people under his authority. So he can say words and people will obey them. For instance, when his supervisor or his commander says, take your 100 soldiers and go from Jerusalem to Nazareth, when he gets an order, he obeys it. He's under the authority of his commanding officer and he does that. And in the same way, his own soldiers, when he tells his own soldiers, 10 of them, to go into Jerusalem and buy food for the other 90 soldiers, as soon as he issues that command, that's what they do. They just naturally obey the one who's under authority. So this guy understands spiritual authority. He understands the authority that belongs to God. And so he says, God, why, you don't have to go to all this trouble to come to my unworthy place. Why don't you speak the word and it'll happen? And notice how his faith allows him to see the situation with perfect clarity. Perfect clarity. He's not murky in his vision at all. He totally understands the role and the power that Jesus has to fix this situation. Now, once he offers this very clear statement of, Jesus, just say the word. You, all authority and power belong to you. Just say the word and it'll be taken care of. Now it's Jesus' turn to marvel at this guy. Remember we talked last week about, O ye of little faith, and how Jesus was exasperated by the lack of faith of his followers. Now Jesus has the opportunity to not be exasperated, but to marvel that he's met someone who totally gets it, who completely understands how life is supposed to operate under God. So Jesus marvels at this guy's faith, And he observes a rare quality of faith in a very unsuspecting person. Very unsuspecting person. This faith is not found in Israel, not even among God's people. Not even among those people to whom it has been given the oracles of the Scripture, the temple, the powerful presence of God, the history of Israel in which God chose a people, brought those people to Himself, excuse me, loves them, cares for them, and protects them. This man is completely outside that faith community. And yet he demonstrates a faith that puts the average Jew to shame. So Jesus marvels at the guy's faith, notes that it's a rare quality of faith, and then also notices, to the chagrin of the Jews, you guys have got all these reasons to have a faith like this, and most of you have missed it. But this Gentile soldier, he's not a man of great education and great stature. He totally sees the hand of God at work and how life revolves around the work of God. So, this is one of those cases where a simple, straightforward grasp of God's presence in this situation moves the heart of Jesus to from compassion to marvel. And it says that Jesus just spoke the word and he went home and his servant was healed. And his servants told him the hour that it was healed, and it was the moment that Jesus spoke a healing word. As he believed, so it happened. What an amazing thing. Now, we're back to these three prayers. Prayer for increased faith. Secondly, prayer for help to overcome unbelief. And then a prayer of great faith. Now, let's kind of put these into a simple prayer format that enables us to approach trials with this prayerful spirit. And here's the way we can go into it. And that is, it says, this is just a prayer that I've composed, and it goes like this. Lord, increase my faith through this trial, so that when you encounter a situation that is bigger than yourself, to prepare yourself for that trial, what you can do is begin going into the trial by trusting that God is going to build your faith through the trial. And that's where you start. You start with your prayer, Lord, there's a trial looming on the horizon. I want you to use this trial to build my faith. Instead of running from the trial or avoiding the trial or trying to resolve the trial, begin by asking God to increase your faith through the trial. And you're positioning yourself for your faith to grow. And then he says, if my faith falters, help me in my unbelief. In other words, when my faith comes up short, Lord, strengthen my faith. And then keeping this in mind, that when the Lord's purposes are served by the trial, God will say the word, and it'll be done. It'll be over. Life will move on as soon as God's purposes are fulfilled through the trial. Now, this is just a simple prayer that we can begin to work through and entrust ourselves to the Lord in circumstances and let Him begin to work through us. So, concept 28, and I'm going to have to stop here because my voice is gone, goes something like this. Faith is increased when we rely upon God to manage our trials while simultaneously relying upon Him to develop within us a reverential embrace of His loving care. And this is where we want to get to, where our faith is enveloped, us and our circumstances, and we're resting in the Lord's embrace. And we've got that clarity of belief that whatever circumstance that comes my way, God is at work, both in and through those. He's going to take care of the circumstance, and also He's going to grow my faith simultaneously so that it's a win-win for everybody. That's where we want to get to. So let me ask you to just do this. how does your faith grow? By trusting God for one trial at a time. Just one trial at a time. You're probably dealing with a certain set of circumstances today. Don't worry about what you got to deal with tomorrow. Just deal with today's. Trust God for whatever's happening in your life now. And what current trial challenge are you facing that you can begin to trust God for fully? And why don't you guys just wrestle with that at your tables? And when you're finished, you'll be free to go. And we'll see you next week. And our next week, we're going to be talking about proactive faith. This is a really good study. So try to get here next Sunday night, and then we're going to break for the summer.